Final hour to go with David Politis as we talk about his work missing 411 hunters. We'll talk about another case or two, and then we'll get to your calls on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, David Politis with us. David, any more recent cases out there in the woods?
You know, we'll kind of switch gears for a second, talk about a hiker that disappeared this year, and it's a really unusual case. The only one of its kind I know about. His name was Jack Thomas, 66 years old, disappeared June 15th of this year in the Sawtooth Wilderness of Idaho, Queens River Trailhead, about 7 miles north of Atlanta, Idaho. He was a super, super experienced hiker, and you knew that because he was carrying what's called a spot device. And a spot device is like a satellite transmitter, and it sends a signal to the satellite. And if you have a friend that has the program downloaded, you could see the progress of the hiker.
Ah, you follow him around.
You do.
Okay.
And every 4 or 5 minutes, it'll send a signal. Well, this is what Jack was carrying. And it isn't an emergency transponder. It's just a signal locator. And he entered the area June 13th, supposedly to be out June 16th. Older man in outstanding shape, avid outdoorsman. Well, on June 15th, he transmitted a signal, and he was expected to be out the next day. Well, he didn't come out. His friends called search and rescue. Local sheriff, National Guard, canines, planes, hundreds of volunteers. Well, they went back to the spot device, and they looked at the location where he last transmitted, and they can get it down to about 10 feet. And they found out that it was on the wrong side of the river from the trail that he should have been walking, which was really peculiar.
How did it get there, right?
How did he get over there? Why would he get over there? And the initial search was terminated on the 27th of June, and then a local foundation called the John Francis Foundation started again, and they rallied a bunch of forces. They searched for another week and a half. They searched both sides of the river, and they confined their search to this 3,000-foot stretch of the river beneath Fern Falls. And after searching all this time, they found nothing. And that's hard to believe, especially since he was carrying a spot device.
Yeah, exactly.
It's the only case I know of where someone was carrying one of these and wasn't found.
And it didn't help him at all.
I guess they found where he was at one time, but, yeah, who really knows?
What is happening to these people, David?
They should have been found.
Are you baffled, too?
Absolutely.
Are you scared about what could be happening to them?
I would say that my habits have changed drastically in the last 5 years from what I used to do before. I mean, I carry a personal locator beacon with me no matter where I go. I always carry a gun with me wherever I go. I'm usually traveling with somebody else, and I always have told somebody where I'm going, when I'm coming out. And everyone needs to do that. They need to tell somebody of trust. And if you don't come out, they call for help.
Well, I got to tell you, if this is not unusual or supernatural, but being done by individuals, they know who you are, so you got to be careful. But I don't think that's the case. I think there's something stranger afoot here, don't you?
I tend to think it would be hard to explain if it was a human.
If it were human. So you're leaning toward the unusual.
I don't know how to explain it and rationally use the facts that we have to explain it away.
When you're out at a party or whatever, and people realize who you are and what you've been doing, do they just encircle you about this stuff?
Well, I think they all want to know, you know, what's the latest? Are there any interesting cases right now? Have we gotten any further on the research? It's a pretty hot topic, as you know.
And these cases just keep coming and coming and coming.
And the sad part is, George, is that the victims' families don't know what's coming.
No, they don't. They're in shock. I mean, do they speculate to you at all what they think might have happened?
I think most of the families always will go towards the mundane because that's all that they've been taught and that's all that they really know. And they will concede that it's unusual what happened to their relative, but it really takes somebody who's gone the distance and gone through the mire of search and rescue and their claims. And there's been a handful of families that I talk to that know that it's something unusual going on.
And what's so bizarre is the fact that they're just gone. Just gone, vanished, thin air.
And I can think of one case that I've written about extensively, and it's the Jared Atadero case where his dad is a junior high school teacher, and Mr. Atadero has gone through the mill as far as explanations and rationality. And initially, the search and rescue people told him a mountain lion killed his son. Well, he's a smart guy. He went out and he sought out mountain lion experts, and they looked at the evidence, and they said, no, mountain lion didn't kill your son, and a bear didn't kill your son, and there's no blood on the clothing. And this man has just been taken to torment about...
Tortured.
Yes, absolutely. And nobody's willing to come up with a viable option for him about what happened to his little boy. And I mean, I've been there with him. We've gone to the site many, many times, and I'm at a loss to explain what happened to him, but I can tell you it wasn't a mountain lion.
You know, what's frightening for me is to just think about these people, assuming that maybe they are someplace right now thinking, oh, my God, how did I get into this? How do I get out of here? But it's something like a dimension or something unusual, and they can't get back. They can't figure out how to get back. But they're out there somewhere. That's scary.
It almost sounds like hell.
It does. Well, that's another possibility.
Right.
Demons grabbing them? Who knows? Let's go to the phones. East of the Rockies, Alex in Farmington, Missouri, to get us going. Hello, Alex. Thanks for calling.
Good evening, George. Great show tonight.
Thank you, sir.
I actually had a story from down here in Missouri that... oh, gosh, I can't remember exactly what year it was, but it's been at least 5 or 6
years. Share it with us. Love to hear it.
I used to work land surveying down in this part of Missouri and around Iron County and Reynolds County. It's kind of down in the boondocks, as mm-hmm. you could say. But we were sort of doing a job for a horse ranch down in part of Mark Twain National Forest. Well, these people do these guided tours all the time of the woods and hiking trails around here. People go horseback riding. There was a fellow that had come on leave with his family from the Air Force and come down and was staying a few days. Well, it's one of those classic Missouri winters where it's 60 degrees during the day in January. Well, he decided that he was going to take his son's two boys on a... hike up to a place called Sutton's Bluff, which is about 2 hours away on foot. Well, several people said on eyewitness accounts that they had seen them up there, that people matching description had been up there, and that they had taken the trail back to going down to the horse ranch. Well, evening comes and goes by, bad weather moves in, freezing rain, mm-hmm. and nothing has been seen of them. And so they called the sheriff's department, the people that owned the horse ranch, all the workers were out on horseback, ATVs. You know, there was several hundred people looking for them and never found anything of them that night.
Nothing.
And the next day, as they resumed the search, they started finding little signs here that they found a tore up or one of the backpacks that the kids had. And they found a little pile of stones. Well, this was right on a trail to one of the horseback riders was on. They either rode right past them or they just missed them. Well, they found the three, the dad and the two sons, unfortunately dead. But they had their shirts removed. No jackets, no backpacks, nothing that they
Weird.
Had with them.
What was the cause of death, Alex?
Hypothermia.
Hypothermia.
Which... I'm a military man myself, and I was talking to it about to the lady that was actually on the search and rescue, that her and her husband owned the ranch. Never seen anything like it. I mean, I was in the military. I know that they teach you to be prepared no matter what you do,
right.
No matter if you're going out for just a couple miles or you're going out for several days, always be prepared. But to me, it just sounded crazy.
And yeah, clearly like these happened. People would have kept their clothes on, right?
Yeah. I mean, they had light jackets, and they had, you know, all the clothes that you should have to go on a walk through the woods, but nothing was found on them except for their pants. And I can't remember if they had their shoes on or not, but no shirt.
Jeez.
They never found any of the other article of clothing except for the one backpack.
All right, David, this sounds like one of those classic cases you've investigated.
Especially since the weather wasn't that cold when they went out. It doesn't make sense.
None of it makes sense, taking their shirts off and everything else. Alex, thanks for that story. Appreciate it. How many missing cases are there, David? Hundreds? Thousands?
Well, I've documented and written about almost 1,800 to this point that all match those specific profile points. And I always tell people, you got to remember that there's thousands more that went missing. We're staying to this real confined area of hitting these profile points, and we're not wandering from there. So as long as I stick to that, I can tell you that there's probably 500, 600, 700 more I could write about that I haven't even documented yet that we found through archival information or new cases that have evolved just in the last 6 months.
Let's go next to Jeff in Wichita, Kansas. Hey, Jeff, welcome to the program.
Yes, thank you, George.
Sure.
I was wondering if any of these disappearances, someone might have fell down a sinkhole or possibly an abandoned well. I see that because a good friend of mine, his family, owned some farmland, and when they bought it, they didn't know there was a well that had been, the top of it had been rocks, and those had disappeared somewhere, but there was still this hole in the ground, and so they had to fill it in so nobody would have a problem, either that or the equipment they were using.
I think they would have been found if they went into a sinkhole, or people would have seen the sinkhole, don't you think, David?
Well, oftentimes what search and rescue will do, especially if they know the person's in a specific area, is they'll walk shoulder to shoulder or hand in hand through a field or through an area to ensure that every bit of it is covered.
Yeah.
And even if somebody went missing in a general area like that, canines would still be able to track to the point where they landed in the sinkhole or the well.
Well, in sinkholes, it's obvious that they're there, right?
Yeah.
I would think. Jeff, thanks for sharing that story. Quicksand? Now, not maybe one or two people, but not a lot.
And again, I think you'd be able to track to that point.
These people, David, are being taken. They're being taken for some reason. Some are being brought back or killed. There's something else going on here. And I think the fact that it's happening out there in the woods and forests and parks, they're easily accessible. It's easier to do that than to grab somebody off the streets of New York or something.
I think it's easy to explain away, isn't it?
Yeah. Mike in Memphis, Tennessee, first-time caller. You're on with David Politis, Mike. Go ahead.
How you guys doing tonight?
Good. Thank you.
Hey, scary I got a couple stuff. Questions for you.
All right.
We used to, my grandfather, my dad, me, and my brother used to go hunting in southern Illinois. We're from Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd go down there and go out in the woods. I mean, there was hundreds of acres. It'd take about 30 minutes off the main road to get back to the house, and there's old farmlands and just thick woods, and they hunted there for generations, and me and my brother were going down in there, and it looked like a creek bed, kind of had big limestones, and there'd be carving. We found this one huge stone, probably 3 feet by 6 foot, and it went deep into the ground, and it had these, like, to me, I thought it was like an Indian carving. Well, I thought it was pretty neat, so I took pictures of it. Got back home, none of them pictures would turn out. So the next year we went down there, we took a different camera, went down in there and found it again, took a picture of it, and it would show like a bright light across it. It wouldn't let you see the carvings. And then we'd go deeper into the woods. Well, we found the piece that broke off of it, and it finished whatever it said or whatever it meant. We'd take pictures of that and the same thing. And my dad used to sneak down in there, further down in there, and he'd come out within an hour or two, and he'd be sick and just want to go home and go back to bed. And it wasn't like him in that area, but the Indian car, I don't know if it was Indian carvings or what, or but
like an obelisk area,
once
or something.
You got down in the bottom, there'd be no life. There'd be no squirrels, no deer, no nothing. It was just real quiet and kind of cold and just different than the rest of the woods.
You think this object was emitting something?
Maybe. I don't know. I wondered that ever since I'm 40, and that was when I was like 9, 10, 11,
going
in there and taking them pictures. And every year we tried different cameras and different things, and nothing would ever turn out, or it would show a bright light across it.
Chalk that up as unusual. Did you have another question there for us?
No, other than him going down in the woods and then coming back and he'd go deeper into there, into that area where we found the second part of the stone, and he wouldn't let us go in there, and he'd be in there for maybe an hour or two, and he'd come back, and he'd just be sick and drained out, like if he lost all his energy down in there somewhere.
All right, that's a great story too, Mike. With all the people who have offered to you possibilities, David, is there one theory, though, that just stands out more than the others? Not going to say that that's it or that that's what you think it is, but is there one that just seems to be cropping up more and more?
Truthfully, George, no.
It's all over the map, isn't it?
It's all over the map, and I think people kind of go to their comfort zone. I mean, there's those people out there that are MUFON investigators, and they go towards UFOs. There's people that are Bigfoot researchers, and they go to Bigfoot. But if they actually read the books, they'll understand how that theory will kind of get wiped out because there's other things that come into play.
Well, the fact that, you know, a few of them are found dead, and they really have no marks on the body or anything like that, not that, like, they're not strangled, stabbed, or shot, it's weird. And so they come up with the logical explanation of hypothermia or something, or a heart attack or something like that.
Well, you know, there's a lot of cases out there, and I've written about them, where a brave coroner comes in and says, we can't determine the cause of death. And when I first started to report about that maybe 2 or 3 years ago, there were a couple of medical examiners in other parts of the U.S. that started to contact me and said, you know, Dave, you've got our ear. We know this has been going on for a long time, and it bothers us that we can't figure out the cause of death, and it's not normal.
Did Cyril Wecht ever try to get a hold of you, the pathologist?
No.
Okay. I would have loved to have him check out some of these things, too. Very
strange.
But there
is something odd going on in the cause of death part.
Yeah, there sure is. David, let's talk more about this. Final segment just ahead on Coast to Coast AM with David Politis, author of Missing 411, the series, the sixth book out, Hunters. We'll be back. Open lines next hour. Lots to talk with you about. And we're going to come back in a moment and take final calls with David Politis, of course, author of Missing 411, the series, this one, Hunters. And welcome back, David Politis, with us. David, you've looked at some urban disappearances. Any similarities and possible causes between that and those that are happening out in the parks and the woods?
There are some similarities in that they can't track point to point. There's no scent trail. If the people are found, similar to in the woods, there's no memory. They just don't have any recollection of what happened, how they got lost, where they went, or it's almost like missing time. So, yeah, there are some close similarities, and I've written about those in past books as well.
Mm-hmm. Now, back to the forest and the woods and the parks, if anybody has been found alive, have they been hypnotized or regressed to see what might have happened to them?
And that's a good question. A lot of these victims are, again, really, really small, or they're older and they have dementia, or they have some kind of other disability. In the unusual instance where you have somebody who could recollect, you have to have a willing participant. And that's an interesting barrier to cross in how you approach that person to participate. A lot of times these people don't want to have anything to do with the event after it's over. They don't want to know what happened. They don't want to dig into it. They just want to stay away from it.
Do they have nightmares?
You know, I honestly can say I don't know.
I bet they do. I really bet they do. All right, let's go to Jeff in Oklahoma City. Hey, Jeff, go ahead. Thanks for calling.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, George and David. Appreciate everything that you're doing.
Sure thing. Thank you.
My question is, I was wondering, I know the criteria that, David, that you use is pretty narrow. My question is, and then there's several disappearances that have happened in the area that I live, and I'd just like to briefly bring you to speed on those and then get your all's input, if that would be all right.
Sure, go ahead.
There was, I guess it was about 6 months ago, I had forwarded some information to David about a man that had disappeared, then was later found under very mysterious circumstances in southwestern Oklahoma, at the Wichita Mountain Wildlife Refuge. And make a very long story short, where he was found and a lot of the circumstances don't add up, and he fit a lot of the different points. He was former military. He was a tracker. He was there to basically spend the weekend and hike. And he was in excellent physical shape. He was found in a remote area in a boulder stream field, basically south of one of the lakes there at the refuge. But the other thing that's an interesting point, I had sent this information to David, and the first email I sent, for some reason, we didn't get connected. And then I guess it was 3 or 4 weeks later, I resent it and heard from David very quickly. And what was interesting, George, just to let you know, I had put this in my email, but I had sent some of this information to David, and in the time frame from when I first initially sent the emails about this particular case to David, I had gone back in about a month later, and they had changed and altered some of the information that was available.
Wow. David, does that happen a lot, where they changed the story a little bit?
You know, I've always told people that you want to glom onto those stories that are the first out, and you want to hold on to them, because I say it evolves. And the story evolves. Remember what I told you earlier, local reports for local consumption. Just like this gentleman said that, you know, there's a lot of things here that add up and make some sense to what we're talking about tonight. Well, if they're trying to calm the community because there is something about the story that's really odd, they may tone it down a lot.
That's true. That is true. Jeff, thanks for your story. I appreciate that. Let's go to Mars near Seattle. Hi, Mars. Go ahead. Welcome to the program.
Hi, George. Hi, David. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
I was wondering if it had ever been explored or if you had done any research into the possibility that law enforcement or first responders or even the alphabet agencies are involved in the disappearances.
Did you think of that, David? Law enforcement might be involved in some of these disappearances somehow?
Never crossed my mind. And the reason being is that people have to understand that law enforcement, as you know it, doesn't do search and rescue. 99% of all search and rescue is done by volunteers. And there are people that have gone out and worked their butts off to get certifications that cost themselves money, themselves weekend and time, and then they're the ones that go out into the field. And the reality is that professional law enforcement people almost never, ever do search and rescue. It's private citizens like you and me. So I don't understand how law enforcement could be involved.
No, just another possibility that you have to put really low on the list, I guess. Let's go to Howard in Vancouver, Washington. Howard, go ahead. You're on with us.
Hello, George and David.
Hey, Howard.
Your cases have kind of left us to explore the more extraordinary explanations, you know, for these incidents. It caused me to recall a case I read about some years ago in the MUFON Journal. And this particular case was investigated by Peter Davenport.
All right.
It was in May 1999, or that was the issue of the magazine. The actual incident occurred on February 25th, 1999. Now, this involved 14 forestry workers. They were working, planting trees in the Cascade Range in western Washington. And all morning long, they were working, and they were on the ridge of on the edge of a valley to their south, and they were watching a large herd of elk at the bottom of this valley. Now, just a few minutes before noon that day, they observed a white object moving in from the south and descend down into that valley. They first thought they were looking at a parachute. It's the way it was shaped. It was just a white thing. It was, they estimated it was maybe 8-10 feet across.
Mm-hmm.
And it dropped down next to this herd and spooked the herd and caused them to start stampeding up the south side of this valley across from them. And one of the elk, it was a full-grown elk, it split off from the rest of the herd, moved to the left, and immediately this white thing swooped down on it, picked it up, and started circling and ascending. And they said the whole time they could see the elk suspended. It was kind of rotating around. Jeez. Like it was on a string or something. But as it gained altitude, it appeared to just get absorbed right into the underside of whatever this thing was. They said it was kind of a hemispherical shaped white object, and it took off. And I thought this particular case would have relevance to what we're talking about tonight. We've dismissed all of the ordinary things, and we have to talk about the extraordinary. And I thought that was pretty extraordinary. Now this was in the May 1999 MUFON Journal. It's issue number 373.
All right, we'll check into that, Howard. Thanks. Is it possible, David, that these disappearances might all of them have something to do with something else in that it could be UFOs, could be Bigfoot, could be wild animals, could be a killer, could be a portal, could be, all of them have these possibilities?
Well, I think at the time that you start to discount certain things, you better stand on pretty firm ground. And I'll stand on pretty firm ground in saying it's not a serial killer and it's not law enforcement.
Okay. Ruling them out pretty fast. There was a case of Sean Higgins. Have we talked about him yet?
I don't think so.
He was he disappeared in October of this year.
Yeah, outside of Gold Beach, Oregon, in the Rogue River Basin. And I know this area really well. I've been salmon fishing there before. I'll tell you a little sidelight. If you go up from Gold Beach and you go up the Rogue River about 25, 30 miles, you're in a really lush basin. About 15 years ago, I was staying at a lodge on the Rogue River, and this lodge had to have been 150 years old, and they had this giant picture on the wall of this kind of a dugout canoe kind of thing that had to have been 20 feet long. And tied next to the canoe was a giant sturgeon, George, 20 feet long.
Wow.
Little side story there. I know this area. It's really thick hunting. And Sean went with his 21-year-old son, Trevor, and they went into there to hunt the deer. And during the day, it was raining, it was foggy. Well, late that afternoon, Sean, the dad, never came back. So Trevor went out looking for his dad, and he didn't come back. And the other people in their party called in search and rescue. 100 searchers responded. National Guard came with a helicopter. Canines were brought in. We're talking really thick wilderness with really heavy rains, kind of a coastal effect. On the fourth day of the search, they found the son, Trevor, 2 miles from camp in a gully. They were lucky they found him. He was severely hypothermic, and he was taken by a helicopter to the hospital.
Mm.
On October 25th, the search was termed for Sean. They found nothing. He was never found. This was only October 14th of this year he disappeared. And this was in this kind of central Oregon area near Gold Beach. Now, to me, how this had relevance is that I had written about a story. So this happened October 14th, 2016. I wrote about a story that happened October 17th, 2004, almost exactly 12 years earlier. This was just north of Beaver, Oregon, near the Oregon coast. And the guy's name was Jeremy Childress. And Jeremy was a super experienced elk hunter. And he went with his friend and his friend's 13-year-old son. Well, Jeremy was a bridge painter, excellent condition, longtime hunter, super smart guy. Well, they came back to camp and they didn't have any firewood. So they got into his friend's truck with his son and they started to drive around looking for firewood. Well, as the night went on, it got dark real quick and it started to rain. And even though they were in the truck, they were lost and they didn't know how to get back to camp.
Right.
Well, they stopped at one point and Jeremy said, "Hey, I think it's right over this knoll. Let's just hike over the knoll. We're going to go and see." Well, the three of them hike over the knoll. It's raining hard. And the 13-year-old started to get scared. And his dad said, "Hey, Jeremy, I think we're going to go back to the car." And Jeremy said, "Okay, I'll be back in a little bit. I'm going to keep going." Well, 2 days later, the dad and the son are still driving around, and a logger finds them and escorts them back to their camp. Jeremy was missing, and they never did find him. They brought in dog teams, helicopters, 300 searchers. Now, in this case, one witness heard what they thought were 3 rounds fired the first night that Jeremy disappeared, but they were so confused, and it was such old information, they didn't know how much credence to put into it. Now, Jeremy's wife, Kristen, organized several post-searches to the original search, never found anything. And in 2006, his wife petitioned the court, and he's now declared legally dead because she needed to get some property in order. He's never been found. And this is, again, one of those stories that if you look down through the rolls, he wouldn't be listed as missing, even though he's never been found.
And these family members, I mean, are they in shock?
They're not only in shock, but they're trying to turn towards a resource that can help them. And
you're the only one.
Well, you got to remember that the search and rescue people, these are all volunteers, and to take a week off of work to search for somebody is a big deal. Most people can't do it.
No, they can't.
And when it drags on for several weeks, these people are tired. They got to get back to their life as well. And there aren't a lot of resources out there for a continued long-term search. And in conferences, I always ask people, I say, so if a 2-year-old disappeared into the woods, how long do you search for that 2-year-old? Because you know they didn't want to disappear and they're scared.
And they're scared.
So how long do we continue that search?
Yep. So true.
It's a theoretical question. If it was your son, you'd never want to stop.
Let's get Glenn in Humboldt County, California. Squeeze you in here, Glenn. Go ahead.
Greetings, Dave and George.
Hi there.
Been listening to you guys for a long time and appreciate your works, Dave. Just a question. Is there any cases out of the Pacific Northwest here, maybe the Emerald Triangle, that you know of? There's several cases that I've looked into that might fall into your criteria. Is there anything that falls in your radar that you know of?
You know, I know your area extremely well because I spent 2 years off and on living in the Hoopa Reservation there. It's a very, very wild area that's rough, and surprisingly, there aren't a lot of cases. There's one historical aspect that I'm looking into where a series of people disappeared in the late 1800s, early 1900s from a series of mines up there in the Northwest. I'm looking into it now, and that has some unusual aspects to it. As far as people that have disappeared locally and today, I know there's one case of a mushroom hunter out of Crescent City that I've looked into that they didn't find, and that was unusual. But other than that, I really don't know of many inside of California.
Highest incidents in what state?
Of just missing people, it's got to be California. Just because of Yosemite and the Sierras have so many people.
Sure.
And the Southern Sierras have so many people.
Sheer size of the state as well.
Right.
Geez. David, again, where can we get your books and give us your website, sir?
If you go to Can-Am, like Canadian American, canammissing.com, you'll find the books and you'll find current articles about missing people, and you can kind of keep up to date on what we're doing. I'm on Twitter and I'm also on Facebook.
And the movie, really soon, right?
Yep, it'll be up probably within the next 3 to 4 months.
Super. Just let us know, give us a heads up, and we'll let everybody know about it, okay?
Hey, George, you've been a great host, and I appreciate the time on your show.
Thanks, David. Get some sleep. I know you've got an early meeting in the morning. I'm going to come back in just a moment, though, with Open Lines. An hour of Open Lines. Anything goes. You want to get supernatural, spooky, tell me some frightening story, do that. But just a news question, we'll do that, too, next.